B-Pod Studios.
Listen, listen, watch, watch, react in real time. Toucher and Rich are on twitch.tv. Just follow the Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
We've had a good couple days of practice, very competitive, and it's going to be that way 9 days from now. So we're trying to stay sharp, and guys are really locked in the last 2 days. It's good, you know, get a chance to really evaluate ourselves and put our best out there. It's an entirely new season. You know, we've earned the chance to be at this moment, and we've got to take advantage of it.
98.5 The Sports Hub, Burt Breer is in studio.
Mm-hmm. Friday mornings with Burt Breer brought to you by Salvador Auto Group. Salvador has incredible deals on Chevy, Ram, and pre-owned trucks just off Route 2 in Gardner and at salvadortrucks.com. Salvador's got your truck.
All right, so Burt Breer from MMQB, there's eight head coaching opportunities, and Brian Flores has got a couple interviews scheduled for today. Of course, Brian Flores, coach there with the Patriots. I am under the if I was a owner of a team, I would not touch Josh McDaniels with a 10-foot pole.
Why not?
Okay, I'll tell you several things. Is that I will I dismiss his time in Denver. He was 32 or whatever he was, and you know,
he wasn't ready.
I think some people take that as almost as an advantage too, because he was very smart. He came out afterwards saying, I kept a notebook as to everything that I did wrong, and I wrote it down, and I've been learning since then.
Yeah,
and I think he's come across as being, like, the wiser.
Like, well, that he's, like, reflective, and he's not.
Yeah.
And look, I think that, like, for some guys who got second chances really quickly, it was damaging. Like, Eric Mangini got a second chance right away. Like, he failed in New York, and the Browns hired him. And it almost – that almost sends the message to a person, like, what you did wasn't wrong. It was your situation.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like Mangini could have, like in that situation, could have said, well, you know, we were pretty good my first year. My second year, we kind of fell off. And then we were good the third year and Favre got hurt. And so everything I did was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets a second chance right away. And it's like, you're never, I mean, Rex Ryan, same thing. Like he gets his second chance right away. You're never like sort of knocked in your ass.
Yeah.
And like forced to like think about like, okay, like, I did this wrong and this wrong and this wrong.
Well, it's great that he kept a diary. I'm sure he'll be the greatest head coach of all time. but I think that his credentials mean nothing because he's been working with Tom Brady. B, I think he's a coward who is afraid ultimately of getting that second chance. I the idea that he's turned all these jobs down and then ultimately took a job and left tells me that he and then the argument is, oh, well, you made a lot of money. And then you know, Bert, you want a head coaching job. If you're the alpha, you want the head coaching job.
He might have been winked and nodded to a head coaching job here.
I think there are different circumstances, okay? And I've heard a lot of people this week say, well, Brian Flores should wait. You're not the one sitting there turning down $25 million. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, if you're Brian Flores and all of a sudden there are five teams that want to interview you, and like you're 37 years old and someone comes and offers you, and what's standard for a first year head coach now is like $20-25 million fully guaranteed over 5 years. That's life changing money.
Sure.
So if you're that guy, like, and I've heard that a lot this week, and it's like, well, look what happened to Steve Wilkes. Look what happened to Vance Joseph. Well, you know what? Those guys are filthy rich now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
right. Like
those guys are going to walk away from those jobs, and maybe they'll get a second chance. Maybe they won't. But if they had waited, there's a chance that never comes back around again,
mm-hmm.
and that money's gone forever.
Sure.
Okay, so that's the one thing I think we have to remember. That's why a guy like Josh is in a totally different situation, because he already made that money, and assuming he took care of it, assuming like, and we know he's being well compensated now, like he has more flexibility than the guy who's going for his first shot has.
And
the other part of it, Fred, before you get started here, the other part of it, I think, is that you know that you're probably not getting a third chance.
Okay, and so I'm afraid to take another job.
And so, I think he's gunshot. I think he's scarred by Denver. I agree with you on that.
But I mean, then he's afraid to take another job. I mean, there's plenty of guys who made plenty of money that have come back and coached. If you want to be, and then to me, if you're saying, well, I've made the money and you know, now I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to take my time being a head coach, I'd say screw you. You don't have the mentality that I need.
However, you have said, and I heard you on, even on, you've been saying it on our show for like a month and a half, but on Colin Cowherd the other day, he asked you,
Packers.
Yeah, who is the next head coach of the Packers? And you, without hesitation, said Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, and I said it was a prediction, not a,
well, of course it's a prediction.
Right.
I mean,
well, no. I think he still has to go in there today, and he has to win that interview.
Well, not according to this show. The show said that it was already done.
I know. It was done in October, I think, like October 20th or something like that.
I don't know. Wallach and Rich just said it was a foregone conclusion.
No, I just think that they have been planning for this for a while.
No, she did.
It's been at the top of the list.
You guys said that the interview didn't matter.
I still don't really think it matters as much.
I hypothesize as to why he would turn down Cincinnati. And it said maybe there are many reasons it's possible. Well, that's one. And I said that's probably what happens. But the other one is maybe Green Bay. He got a wink and a nudge from Green Bay saying, come here.
The Packer job to me is, I don't like it as much as the Cleveland job. But, like, you can go in there and assuming you can reach Aaron Rodgers. And that's an assumption. That's not a sure thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Aaron Rodgers isn't the quarterback who, when a coach comes in, he's going to roll over and say like, yeah, anything you want, coach. Like you're going to have to win him over, right? Mm-hmm. Assuming you can do that, though, you've got probably 5 years left of like all time level play, right? And that gives you a 5 year runway to find the next one. And so, and that's sort of where Mike McCarthy was when he walked into Green Bay 13 years ago,
mm-hmm.
where like he had Brett Favre, and it's like, and he had Aaron, and at the time he had Aaron Rodgers behind him. So it's like, okay, like now I've got Aaron Rodgers or I've got Brett Favre, and I'm going to get what I can get out of him. And then when Aaron Rodgers is ready, he's ready. And
he only won one Super Bowl, by the way, which makes, right. I don't think he's a great coaching candidate.
I think like the one reason why the Packers are, and one important reason why the Packers are really interested in Josh McDaniels. The idea of like it is a challenge coaching a guy like that. And I know a lot of people out there think that sounds silly, right? Like, oh, well, it's Aaron Rodgers. How hard can that be?
No.
Just roll out the – no, it's a really, really difficult thing because the amount of background that guy has, the intelligence he has, the experience he has, all that stuff,
didn't
right?
we hear he was ignoring Mike McCarthy's plays at the end of the season or at the end of his tenure there?
How do you walk – like on a day-to-day basis – how do you walk into that building and give that guy something new? How do you give that guy something he hasn't already heard? How do you challenge that guy? Like, that is a difficult thing. And I can just tell you, people who've coached Brady and Manning, what they'll tell you is there's an anxiety and there's a pressure that comes along with it. Because when you walk in the building, it is difficult to be more prepared than that guy is, mm-hmm. right? Like, so that exists with Aaron Rodgers, too. And 90% of the candidates that the Green Bay Packers are going to interview, they're projecting into that role. With Josh McDaniels, they don't need to project him into that role. That's been his job. Like, he's had that pressure.
Charlie Weiss's job, too, and it was Bill O'Brien's job as well.
I'm just telling you.
There's never been an offensive coordinator for the Patriots that coached Tom Brady that hasn't been successful.
Bill O'Brien?
With the Patriots.
But both those guys, like, do you think
Bill O'Brien became a pretty good coach?
All right. I'm not taking credit away from Tom Brady. I think he's the greatest quarterback of all time. I don't think Bill Belichick is putting someone in that room with Tom Brady who he does not think is capable of challenging Tom Brady, of giving Tom Brady new information, of coaching Tom Brady. And like I think that that's the reason why, and you guys, if you look at the makeup of a lot of these staffs across the NFL, right? A lot of these staffs, you have an offensive coordinator and a quarterback's coach. I think going back to 2001, I think that was the last year those two jobs weren't the same here, right? Mm-hmm. Because you had Dick Rabein, who passed away, and you had Charlie Weiss. Then Charlie Weiss, then Josh McDaniels became the quarterback's coach. Then once Josh McDaniels became the coordinator, they have never had a separate quarterbacks coach from the coordinator, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because you have to, like, they haven't had anybody qualified enough to coach Tom Brady. So, like, I see what you're saying, Fred. Like O'Brien and McDaniels have both had a lot of success, and a ton of that has to do with number 12, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's a level that coach has to be at to teach Tom Brady.
So
right?
Which team wants him the most, McDaniels?
I think the Packers do. I think the Packers are the team that's there. Now, again, like, he's got a lot of questions to answer, and I don't think the Packers are going in there with a contract. You know what I mean? Like,
okay, so you agree with me that the interview is very important.
The interview is incredibly important.
Thank you.
And I think relationships, and I said this in October, guys, I think relationships are important, too. And
aren't there people in the organization that already...
And this is 2 years ago, okay? Like, before Kyle Shanahan got that job, Josh McDaniels was damn close to having it. And they played, I believe, Houston in the divisional round, right? Like, I was told that weekend, the Niners got an email from Josh that basically was, I mean, more or less measuring for his office. Like measuring the windows to put up drapes in the office. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Like, it was, how's the video department work? The Niners thought they had him. And it was that close. And then, you know, after that Houston playoff game, I think Josh reflected some and decided I'm not.
Chickened out again.
All right. So listen, okay? So he's very, very close. The point is he's very close to taking that job. Simultaneously, the front runner for the general manager job, which was also open, was a young Packers assistant who blew the Niners away, Brian Gutekunst, who since has been promoted in Green Bay to general manager. And so that week, like, those guys were clearly sort of emerging as the favorites on the two tracks. They do background work on each other. And so they have some familiarity there. Brian Gutekunst has an idea of who Josh McDaniels is. Josh McDaniels has an idea of who Brian Gutekunst is. They aren't as far down the road as Chris Ballard and Josh McDaniels were. But I think that the fact that those two guys were almost paired together in San Francisco counts for something.
Okay. It counts for that he knows that McDaniels has no interest in putting himself on the line and getting...
You really hate Josh.
No, I don't hate him. I don't hate him at all. I have no
hate
personal...
him as a candidate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I think he's a coward.
Yeah.
I think this whole time he's been a complete coward. I think what he did in Indianapolis is unconscionable. I don't think that he's a brilliant enough football mind to put up with his crap. So, yeah, I don't even hold Denver against him. But, I mean, he laid in his own bed with Tebow. All right. I want to talk to you more about head coaching opportunities. We'll get to the Steelers and stuff. We'll be right back.
98.5. Toucher and Rich.
Fresh, yeah, good hair. You can say I'm Malcolm-esque. Like the tresses, like the dresses, flowy and sexy. Spin off, blow up, Joni and Chechny. Yeah, ride Martin to the Georgia Dome. Caucasian boys, cream topical like cortisone.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Bert Breer from MMQB is here. And we were discussing the prospects of Josh McDaniels, and he's got a I guess an inside track with that Green Bay job, but you know, there's eight openings. They're all intriguing. And do you think Brian Flores, first of all, gets a job this year? Seems to be interviewing a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I would normally say he's probably a year away, but I know he interviewed really well last year in Arizona. He was second for that job, and just the volume of interviews. Like, I sort of think he's going to get one. Like,
okay.
I sort of think he's going to get one. Again, like, you know, it's easy for all of us to sit here and say, like, be patient, dude. Like, don't take your time. You don't want to wind up like Steve Wilkes.
How well did he do this year? Like, that's the one thing. Is like, I was kind of shocked that he was getting all these calls, because what did you say? They were 21st in scoring. The defense, John, when you went through it?
Yeah, defense a little better than we thought. They were in the top 10 against the run.
But I think you have to consider what he was working with, too.
And that's the thing. The front seven is not in shambles, but, I mean, not nearly.
No, the front seven's not good.
In the front seven, who do you look at in the front seven and say, like, that's a guy you can build around?
Exactly.
Well, Flowers.
Hightower was. I don't think he's
not anymore.
No, obviously he's
like,
not.
Yeah, so, like, Malcolm Brown's, like, they was a pretty sizable bust as a first, not a huge bust because he's playing, but like a bust as a first round pick.
But there's nothing there that would blow you away. You know what I mean? Like, and like, no matter what, you don't think of them as being like, whoa, defensively, this team really has it together.
21st in total defense, but 7th in scoring defense.
I think with him, it's more, so what's attractive about him is, A, I think that there's a leadership and ability to, and this is why he interviews well, right?
Yeah.
Is an ability to lead the room. Like, that I think
players love him.
Matt Patricia didn't have this. Like,
you don't say.
To agree that Flores does.
Boy, is that a disaster.
Yeah.
Is he still, okay, real quick, I hate to sidetrack. Is he truly like showing up late to everything? Because, I mean, that was one of the things that came out is that apparently all team meetings, he leaves the media waiting.
Well,
for ridiculous amounts of time.
I mean, how long? Belichick's been leaving the media waiting for how many years?
You get the right to do that when you have as many rings as he does.
I'll tell you what, like, one of the reasons why you're hearing, and that happens in the NFL, right? Like, that happens. Like any other business, there's, like, not everybody's Tom Coughlin.
Sure.
Okay. Part of the reason why, like, you're hearing about it now is because that, for one reason or another, was the number one complaint about from the coaches that were held over and from the players that he inherited was this schedule sucks. Like, I don't even think, like, and you heard a lot about the running in the summer, right?
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I running as punishment. We've seen that here forever where they run laps after they jump off sides or whatever, all that stuff. Like, there were actually a lot of players that didn't mind that because Jim Caldwell, when he was the coach, like, for some of his faults was very disciplined, and so you would never hear about the discipline. They get fined.
Yeah,
and I know some players were like, I'd rather
run
a couple laps
and lose money
than have somebody take $5,000 or $10,000 out of my
pocket. I'll tell you this about Patricia: is he mishandled the preseason to such a degree that the team didn't try for the first three games? I mean, the team dogged the first three games.
Yeah,
they did. They dogged it against the Jets. Then they completely crapped themselves in the next game, and then they quit against the Bears. I mean, he lost the team. Patricia was such a bad coach that he lost the team. Now, it improved a little bit as the season went on, but he lost the team for the first three games. His first three games as head coach.
I think he has some of the same issues that – I think his issues are actually sort of similar to, like, what Romeo Crennel's issues were when he got his shot in Cleveland, where, like – one of the things that Bill's best at is it's not only assessing, and, you know, they've always been so good at, like, basically evaluating the guys in their own roster, right? Like, they usually, not always, but they usually know when it's time to move on from a guy. They usually know when it's time to pay a guy, all of that stuff. He's just as good at evaluating his coaches. And so because he's so good at evaluating his coaches, he's really great at covering up their weaknesses.
Yeah.
And I've heard guys who've left here say, Bill's such a mastermind at covering up things that when some of these guys get out there, now all of a sudden it's like all the stuff that was being covered up for is exposed. And I think you're seeing that with Patricia.
Yeah, and a lot of these guys, it seems to a layman like myself, pick up random stuff from Belichick or start imitating random stuff for Belichick that really has nothing to do with Belichick's success.
Yeah, and I think I think Matt's a smart coach. I think he's got a chance if they're patient with him. He needs to grow into the role. I think you're 100% right about that. Is the big mistake that I think a lot of these guys make is that they take everything about Bill and associate it with the success.
Yep.
Which is completely the wrong way to
do
it.
Well, you saw that with Mangini Mangini went and, you know,
you saw with Josh.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they
both dressed like him, but
they treat the media that way. They said, I mean, it's
and
just...
that was funny about Mangini is that he treated the media like crap, and then you saw him on ESPN, and the guy had a personality, and you're going, like, you just can't.
Because the biggest thing is like when it comes to that is when pro athletes like the pro football players I've been around, they're not always the smartest guys. the one thing that they all have in common is they all have, for one reason or another, they all have an incredible BS meter. Like, when somebody's full of it, they can tell.
Yeah.
Right. Right? And so, like, the worst thing that you can do as a coach in the NFL is try to be someone else.
Yep.
If you're not yourself, they're going to see through it right away, and you're screwed.
Yeah. Interesting.
Like, because... like, and I think you've seen it time and time again that guys get into these jobs, and now all of a sudden, where when they were assistants, they were themselves because they didn't need to project in front of a room and they weren't trying too hard. Now all of a sudden, you put them in front of a room, and they're not themselves anymore.
Right.
Players see through it and shut them down.
Okay, yeah. So if you had to rank, we've been through McDaniels, we've been through Flores. I'm fascinated by these discussions. If you had to rank the jobs. You like Cleveland number one.
Cleveland number one, because it's not just – it's Baker. I love Baker. Like, I think Baker is going to be a top five quarterback. But beyond just Baker –
For how long?
Here we go.
This is the running argument part. We like Baker Mayfield. He can't stand
him. I like him because he's going to be an amazing douche for years to come. Like, the NFL needs –
I think he's going to be a good
NFL needs a dynamic player.
The theater of it is going to be awesome.
It's going to be great. Like, you need a dynamic player that's easy to hate.
And you know what, Fred? I'll give you the nod here. Even if it's crash and burn, it's going to be awesome.
Oh, no.
It's going to be awesome no matter what.
Either way. He's great for the NFL. It's
great.
No matter what.
No, he's such a douche. It's great.
But he's talented, and that's what makes him even better.
He is talented. Oh, I mean, like even his arrest, his arrest, right? Like, you guys remember his arrest?
Of course, yeah.
It was like at the taco truck. Like outside the bar in Fayetteville, right? So when I was living in Dallas, and you lived there too,
yep.
I remember thinking, like, God, like there's so many hot girls that are from the University of Arkansas that live here. It's such a weird thing. And it's like I find out that there's a great fashion school and everything else. So where does Baker Mayfield get arrested?
Right to where the hot women
are. He got arrested in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Yeah. Because, of course, he was there playing the I'm the Oklahoma quarterback card,
of
right?
Course, of course. I mean, there's a million. That's why you need a guy like that. You need a hateable douche who's so good. Who's like infuriatingly talented.
Let's not go crazy. Cleveland, infuriatingly talented?
For being a rookie?
Douche?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm. So it's not just Baker. It's like, if you look at the roster, Myles Garrett, Denzel Ward, Jabril Peppers, Larry Ogunjobi, David Joku, they've got so many guys who are outrageously talented that are under 25 years old, that are on their rookie contracts.
Yeah.
They've got a ton of money to spend. It's just a healthy, from a football standpoint.
If you're McDaniels, which one do you pick if they both want you?
Cleveland.
Okay. And you think he would do that? Because I know, obviously, he's from there. And
I think that I think there was probably a point where going back to Cleveland might have been a negative for him because it's a lot, you know, if you're going back home.
Sure.
I think now that maybe, you know, his kids are a little older and all the rest, I think it would be a positive.
Is he number one on their list?
On Cleveland's list?
Yeah.
No, Cleveland's wide open.
Yeah.
Cleveland's wide open. I mean, the guy I would keep an eye on in Cleveland is again, we've talked a lot about him, and it's not a huge name, but the Iowa State coach, Matt Campbell.
Not according to the Canton Repository, the report I read this morning. They're Josh McDaniels is enthusiastically interested.
That's Josh's hometown paper.
I really
wonder how they got that.
I really want the Jets to get that guy from Iowa State. All right, we will be back. We'll continue this discussion. Then we'll get to the Steelers situation. Here are the headlines.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Hi, how are you, honey?
Hello.
Boston Talk Sports.
I'm overwhelmed.
Toucher and Rich.
You can eat a lot at one sitting.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now that 98.5, the Sports Hub, has received a long-term contract extension, I believe it's only natural to think Tom Brady is next, right?
Tom Brady, look, Tom, I'm only hesitating because there aren't adjectives to describe how exceptional he is.
Of course.
And anybody who doubts that is, you know, doesn't understand things. Tom's under contract for next year, and I think hopefully people have seen that, you know, there's a real understanding between all of us about how that situation is going to work into the future. And Tom, we're so lucky to have him as the quarterback and the leader of our football team. He was the MVP of the league last year, whatever, not that that matters. And I I read something he said last week because someone asked him about statistics. He said, all I wanted, you know, all I care about is wins, and that's why he's Tom Brady, and that's why you wouldn't want anybody else quarterbacking your football team.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Burt Breer from MMQB in studio.
Before we get to Steelers stuff, I just want to see.
Can't
what
help
you
but think about The Office one.
Oh yeah. So, what do you think of the Patriots? They could be less than 2 weeks away from having to make a pretty interesting decision regarding Tom Brady and his future.
Yeah, his contract. He's in a contract year. I don't believe they've ever been this close to the expiration of his contract.
I don't think they have. Did they make it to the beginning of the preseason with a year left before, or is that 2 years?
No, I think he had 2 years left.
Okay, yeah, he had two years left. Patriots have never entered a lame duck year with this contract player.
Right. Yeah.
So what do you think the Patriots, what's going through their head right now?
Maybe expanding TB12 down at Patriot Place.
As part of the new place.
I don't know. I mean, like the market for quarterbacks has changed so much. I mean, he's making less than half of what Aaron Rodgers is making.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you're Brady, do you walk into this and do you say, I'm willing to cut you some breaks? Maybe we agree to some post-career stuff? Or do you look at it and you say, well, there's a good chance you're going to be blowing a few things up here, and I may have to be part of a rebuild again like I was in 09 and 10, and I'm going to be 42 years old. I want to be paid like one of the top five quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
And right now, to be paid like a top five quarterback means making $30 million a year.
And no incentives either if you're Brady. I mean, you got screwed on that this
year.
Yeah,
and he got hosed there. And so if you're Brady, wouldn't you look at it and say, like, Brady can go in with a straight face and ask for $35 million a year.
For 2 years.
Yeah.
His base salary, by the way, $14 million next year.
You would think that how many years do you think they would offer him? Or that realistically that he could get?
Or that they would guarantee
Well, in
more.
Football, so in football, yeah. I mean, Fred brought up the key word there, guarantee. In
sure.
Football, years mean nothing. It's the guarantee.
Because didn't Breeze get a two-year, $60 million?
No, two-year, $50
million. Two-year, $50 million.
So Breeze took less. Like, it was the first time in his career. But see, Breeze had a history of – Breeze's history was to take every penny off the table. Mm-hmm. And Breeze made every dime of his last two contracts. And then finally now he's taking less. So now he's making – and again, it's – not a gigantic discount, but he could have gone to the market last year. He could have pushed the envelope. He probably could have gotten $30 or $35 million a year. Instead, he took a two-year deal for $50 million. I would guess that Brady would do something like that, but $25 million a year is still a lot more than he's making now. And so it just changes the math when it comes to the cap.
So you think that there's going to be a two-year extension for a decent amount of money, most likely.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like that. They have to. I mean, what choice do they have? He has them over a barrel.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo here anymore.
Yeah, they don't make the playoffs.
I mean, there's no...
Nick Foles.
I mean, like, if you... If you don't have Tom Brady... If you don't have Tom Brady next year, you are really stumbling around in the wilderness then.
If you don't have Tom Brady, you might not make the playoffs for the next 3-4 years.
I think if you don't have Tom Brady, I think you're like a six win team.
AFC East is pretty bad.
How the hell? I agree with you, Bert. There's a six win team. How in the hell, without Tom Brady, do they compete for a playoff spot?
Who in the AFC East is automatically going to be
okay?
Top
but
of the
no,
heat?
No. But here's the thing, Rich. Is like you're thinking of it like, oh well, they'll figure it out.
With no, who? I'm not thinking to figure it out. No, I'm just saying instant.
With who's going to come in here and be the quarterback? Like, we look at the other AFC East teams through the lines of, oh, well, you know, there's Ryan Tannehill in Miami and Sam Darnold in New York. Like, how are they even going to find a quarterback that good? Like, it's just, like, what's going to be out there? Flacco? Like, who you bring? We're talking totally hypotheticals because
Brady's not going.
We all think Brady's going to be the quarterback here next year.
But the point is that if the Patriots don't have Brady, especially with the way, because their roster is going to not be up to par
right
for years now.
I think of all the age on this team, too.
Well, that's the thing. And then the other teams have a bunch of, especially the Jets, have a bunch of salary room.
Just to put in context the situation that they're facing, because this isn't us speculating. This is like a very real situation they're facing. There are five guys on that roster, right, that are on the books right now to account for $77 million next year. That's Brady, Gilmore, Gronk, Hightower, McCourty, right? Those five guys. All five of those guys are going to be 29 or older next year, okay? If you want to look at the next two highest cap numbers, it's Dwayne Allen and Marcus Cannon. Both those guys are going to be 29 or older on opening day next year. So you look at that, like your seven highest numbers for next year are guys who are, by definition, at best on the back end of their prime. All of them are there for big money. So I don't think all those guys are going to be back. Say you lop a couple of those guys off. Okay, well, who are the young players coming up behind them? Generally, your third and fourth year guys are the guys who...
They're not going to play Flowers.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. I mean, your third and fourth year guys are the guys who you look at and you say, okay, like, well, those are the guys who are still being paid like rookies but are playing like veterans. There are only five guys left from the 16 and 17 draft classes. The best player is Joe Tooney, who's fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Iron Man.
But they don't have, like if you want to look back at the 14 team, like the 2014 team, they had like a legitimate like farm system almost behind the stars, right? Like you had Darrell Revis, he was on his way out, Malcolm Butler coming up behind him. You had Sebastian Vollmer on his last legs, Marcus Cannon coming up behind him. You had Shane Vereen, I believe he was going to be a free agent, James White coming up behind him. Who's coming up behind any of these guys?
Yeah, I know. It's not a good place that they're at right now.
They don't make the playoffs.
This isn't for a long time. It's going to be hard next year with Tom Brady.
Right.
Like without him, it'd be impossible. And so that's what I'm saying. Like when I say that he has him over a barrel, he has them over a barrel. Like they need him next year.
All right. What about Gronk? Is this his last year?
I think
he'd have to take a huge pay cut.
I don't think he's going to be back at the number. The number right now is 12 against the cap and it's 10 in cash. I do not think they're paying him that. I think there's a very good chance Rob Gronkowski is going to have to make a decision. Do I want to play for another team or do I want to retire?
But would another team give him?
And that's the thing is, like, I don't even know that he's more valuable to anybody else anymore.
He just got through saying last summer that he wasn't going to play for anyone else.
Right.
I mean, less than a year ago he said that.
But if he changed his mind, Bert's right. I mean, teams can make stupid decisions, but not that dumb. I mean, you're not going to hand Rob Gronkowski.
Not a chance.
No, any kind of money.
I mean, am I wrong to think, like, watching him this year, everything looks hard?
Yes.
Of course. Right. No, it's been almost painful to watch.
Everything
looks
hard.
You feel bad for him.
I mean, and I give him all the credit in the world for fighting through it because there are lots of guys who've handled that. And we talked about it. I think we talked about this in September. When a guy who's that talented like loses like his superpowers, you know what I mean? Like that's a really difficult thing for those guys to go through. We saw how Dez Bryant handled it, right? Like Dez Bryant did not handle it very well.
No.
And like there are very few guys who are, and I've used this example a few times, Larry Fitzgerald. There are very few guys who are like Larry Fitzgerald who can reinvent themselves on the fly. And you know, Larry Fitzgerald used to be this all-world talent, like who was unstoppable out there. And he's given us like all the credit in the world to him. He gave his career a second life. Jerry Rice did it all those years ago.
Sure.
Do you get the idea that Gronk is the guy who wants to do that?
Because
he's already started talking about retirement. Once these guys start to talk about that, I think it'd be very hard. It'd be very hard for anyone to find a case of a player who was talking about retirement and then all of a sudden was just all in for the next 5 years.
Part of me thinks that if they would have won the Super Bowl last year, he might have retired. And I think that's how that got leaked out there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we'd probably be talking about a different equation.
What would Gronk reinvent himself into? It's different for a tight end than it is for a wide receiver.
I mean, well, I think we're seeing what he is now, right?
No, but you say you're comparing.
He's sort of figuring it out now. Like, he's just not. I mean, he's a run of the mill tight end, right? Like, I don't know what else to call it. Like, he's still capable of the circus catch and
He still draws double coverage though.
Not as much,
but he's still. I mean, in the past couple of games, there's
not
been
a whole lot.
Where
I mean,
I don't think
the Jets double take.
No, they didn't. I mean, I think I saw something on Twitter. Somebody put up something where it was like video of the Jets, like it was like, oh, here's double cover. The guy was covering him, and then there was a safety in the middle. And the safety's responsibility is cover everything deep, so he just sort of followed him, and then that freed up, I believe, James White. That wasn't double coverage. That was just the safety having the deepest guy.
No, but they had Jamal Adams one-on-one with them almost the entire
game. And Jamal Adams, twice now, has sort of had his way with Gronk.
Yeah. And they said in the broadcast, they said that the Patriots didn't believe that he was good against the pass. But what are you going to do? All right, I don't even know if we're going to have time to talk about it, but let's get a little primer on what's happening with the Steelers. We'll be right. And then we can look forward to Merriweather not calling it 8.
We'll see.
The games are only half of it. Thatcher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And Sizzling.
Get up in it. Start a rub. Get a watch dog. Farmer roller up. Big wheels. Cadillac grill. Keep it escort. Daddy got the deal.
98.5 Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. Bert Breer from MMQB is in the studio. All right, we have 5 minutes. You go. Pittsburgh Steelers, Antonio Brown. What's going on?
Little things set him off. That's always been the way that it is with him. And so what I was told and what he's told people around him is that, and look, the one thing you can say for Brown, he his work ethic is beyond reproach, right? Like I had somebody there tell me the other day, like he is so easily number one as far as like work ethic goes on our roster that I don't even know who number two is, right? And what I'd heard was that, you know, over the last couple months he'd sort of become frustrated with the makeup of the team, that he didn't feel like the people around him were as invested as he was, that he didn't feel like they were taking it as seriously as he was, and as they started to lose games, that frustration grew. And the way it's always been with him is that he'll have these frustrations and then he'll, you know, there'll be little triggers and they'll blow and all of a sudden they'll blow up. And so the trigger this time around, from what I understand, and people in that building, what those people in that building believe, was this team MVP vote. And that, like, not only was he not elected team MVP, but it was another guy in his position group room that was elected team MVP.
And it was, like, right after he had a 2-touchdown game, correct? And, like,
14 catches, 184 yards. They lose by 3 points. Oh, like, the next
Schuster
day.
Schuster gets it.
Like, the next day, Smith-Schuster is named team MVP. So
that's kind of an F you then. Like, that's just the team saying, we don't like you.
So he shows up to work pissed off.
Sure.
And, like, what in the, like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's, like, I mean, Ben isn't going to be pushed around. AB isn't going to be pushed around. They get into practice. One thing leads to another. And you have the blow up. And in essence, what I think Antonio Brown did last week was saying, oh, I'm not the MVP. Let's see how you guys do without me.
Win.
but then he wanted to come back. Yeah. But then he came back on Sunday, and
he cooled off. I loved Tomlin's handling of it. Didn't they ask? I think at the press conference he was asked, did he quit on the team? He said, you can interpret that in any manner that you'd like.
Interpret that any kind of way you'd like to interpret that. I can't close my eyelids. For some reason, they remain wide open at all times.
I love his press conference.
But Tomlin, I think the team would like that, what he said.
Well, sure. I mean, if they all are against it, However, you can say that, but you need to have that guy. I was asked
the other day about that. Somebody said, well, I thought Tomlin was a player's coach. I'm like, yeah, this is him taking up for the other 52 guys. Yeah. Like, that's what this is. Like, but this isn't being a player's coach. This is like, you know what? Screw you, Antonio. Like, when we needed you the most, like, you walked out of here.
Right.
Like, so, like, I'm taking up for the other 52 guys who were here all week and who were getting ready to play the Bengals in what was, I mean, in essence, that's a de facto playoff game.
But how much of this, though, is on Tomlin, though? Because hasn't he created this culture where...
But I think but here, like, okay, so I think this is, like, this is the Steeler model, all right? It's just, this is what it is. And this goes back to Chuck Knoll. This is Bill Cowher. This is Mike Tomlin. They have hired these coaches that are battleship commanders, that are the guys, like, and the idea is you hire a guy who can manage big personalities and who can handle risk. And the idea behind it is we're going to be able to cast a very wide net, and we're going to be able to build outrageously talented rosters. And we're going to put a guy in charge who maybe isn't the greatest X's and O's guy, but a guy who can lead and who can manage personalities. And what have we seen over the years? They have been outrageously talented for 40 years because they've always had these coaches in place who can handle the big personalities. And it's interesting because, like, you look at here at this place, like right, like New England, and in certain cases they've passed on talent or they've given up on talent to take intangibles,
sure,
right? Like, the Steelers have always done it the opposite way, where it's, we're willing to give a little bit on personality. We're willing to give a little bit on, you know, like, we're willing to give a little bit maybe on off-field stuff.
But we'll handle it later.
And we'll, because we've got the infrastructure in place to make it work. And so, like, I think that this is...
And it finally bit him in the ass.
It has in the past. I mean, like, but if you look at, like look at those 70s, those teams in the 70s, had a bunch of badasses there, right?
They were doing,
like,
blow before the Super Bowl in Miami.
But that's, I mean, like a different era.
But all right, but then let's go to the 90s then. Kevin Green, Greg Lloyd, Bam Morris, who was, like, basically a drug lord, right? Like, I mean.
But were they making the playoffs? Now you've got Tomlin, who has probably the most talented roster in the AFC, and they don't arguably the most talented roster in the AFC.
Arguably the most talented offense.
To be fair, he's been to two Super Bowls and he's won one.
How many years has it been? McCarthy's won a Super Bowl too, and they finally got enough of him.
It's been a bunch of years. But, like, it's just, look,
you had that job for life because you did that?
And
the Steelers.
But being patient paid off for them. Yeah. Look, there were a lot of people who wanted Bill Cowher fired before he won his Super Bowl. Because he went to one in his third or fourth year, right? Like, very early in his career. And then if you remember, this was pre-Ben, like Tommy Maddox, like 2000. Like, they got mediocre for a few years there. 8-8, 9-7. And there were people who said, we should fire Cowher. They've always been patient with their coaches, right? They've always been patient with their coaches, and it paid off in that case. They wound up winning a Super Bowl at the tail end of Bill Cowher's career. And so I'm not saying it's right, but, like, that's just the way the Steelers have always done business.
Is someone going to take – I know that they can't trade him, but is there a team that actually –
they can trade him.
Okay.
Oh, it's doable.
Where would he go?
Dead cap number, though, right?
But he's already on the books. Like, his cap number next year, Wallach, is $22
million. Yeah.
His cap number, if he's not on the team, is $21 million. So basically they've already got, like, the money that's already accounted for. Like, the money that he's going to be making is accounted for. You just have to be comfortable with the idea that we're going to be because all the dead money comes due.
Does any other team have a dead cap number for one player of over $20 million?
You don't need to, like, the other team doesn't take that on.
No, I'm saying in the league, they do trade him.
The Bills are, like, this year. Now, it's not one player, but the Bills are carrying $60 million.
I don't care about that. Who realistically would trade for Antonio Brown?
I would be interested to see if the Niners would do it.
The Jets could.
You followed him on Instagram.
I know there's that piece of it. I think one of the priorities for Kyle Shanahan is to get more explosive. Antonio Brown's somebody who would do that. The numbers are actually affordable going forward, too. If you're trading for him, there's $39 million left on his deal over 3 years. $13 million per for a receiver of that caliber right now, I would say, is a discount. If you look at, like, what Odell got, what Sammy Watkins got, like, now there's the question, if you're trading for him, is he going to all of a sudden say, like, well, wait a second, you got to pay me too?
Sure.
Like, there's that, but if he's willing to come in at the numbers that he's making right now, like, what's left on that deal? Like, he got a lot of upfront money. So right now, what he's got left on that deal is actually pretty affordable.
All right, well, Haley's Comet comes around every so often, and so do Brandon Merriweather calls.
Yeah, still waiting?
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen, but...
He said 24 hours ago that he was in, and then I just called. I kept contacting him to confirm, and hadn't heard anything since. So,
and, so yesterday evening, I was at a recital for my fifth grade recital, and then I got back home, and my program director and Rich were talking about a controversy that happened on the show yesterday, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I found out, and then I said, well, this is really dumb.
Oh, it is about as dumb as it gets, and it's all over the press. I mean, I'm talking all the New York papers wrote about it yesterday. By the way, we were always a local morning show. They never actually threw in the name, Toucher and Rich, even the radio station, which would have been kind of nice.
Well,
but Danny Ainge said something that heads exploded, apparently, yesterday.
Yes, it was a very controversial comment, so we will discuss that because I have no faith that Baron Merriweather has any intention of calling the show. No commercials here, just the headlines. Thank you, Bert.
Thanks, guys.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.